condition, my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, Monday, it's Action Jack, somehow. Got Weber on the board, SP Futures. Hey, up 32.75. We're actually at an up day going so far. NASDAQ Futures up 94. Virtually every stock in the Dow pre-market is up. One stock that is down, I got Netflix down 11.33 because their earnings came out last night. Originally, they were received pretty well and the stock was up, but not now. It's down a little bit. Just as a quick review of yesterday's carnage, Dow was down 631, that's 2.7%. S&P down 86, that's over 3%. NASDAQ down 297, that's 3.4%. So maybe we're up 40% of that. So, and that's not even a Fibonacci number, he's more like two-thirds. So right now we're a Matty Weber number, 40%. We could start a whole new technical thing with you.
What are we talking, Matt's college grades?
They
weren't that good.
So how come you didn't tell the guy yesterday that had this huge system that you've already been all the way through it, Matty, and knew all how it worked and you were already doing research?
That conversation was excellent and way over my head.
Me too. I thought Python was a gun or a snake.
Yeah, they start talking about algorithm trading systems and coding based on data sets. I'm like, very interesting. Certainly could follow along to some degree, but could never set something like that up.
Although there were, I tell you what, there was some interesting, and we should talk about it for a minute. I know we have a whole bunch of things to talk about. We also make sure we mention this United Airlines thing. Kevin, they went out and sold $1 billion more stock yesterday. Actually, at a pretty decent price, like $26 a share or so. I was surprised when he was talking about the history of the stock numbers. And they were using close to close. This is just, I mean, Kevin, you know, I mean, we're going to be, you know, poor step kids compared to what this guy was talking about statistically. But I know in the University of Chicago did all this original research, you know, back in when I was there. They'd already been doing it for years. They were very concerned with the actual movement of the market tick by tick. And then when options came in, they tried to look at volatility. They said, well, you know, the only really way to do this in any sort of a neat manner, maybe not necessarily the proper manner, was close to close. Now, yesterday, you know, Chris mentioned that all their stuff now is in the things that you go to the different places and download when you do your own research. Because what his book allows you to do is your own research necessarily. He said they were basically looking at stocks and they were looking at close to close again, not the tick by tick that the University of Chicago did and some other people have done, and nothing in intraday, and just, you know, and he said the history never is kind of useless if you go back more than 5 years. And I was, I don't know what to think of that. I was kind of stunned. I don't know. I'm not so sure that sometimes close to close is okay. I mean, I understand what it is. I mean, I understand the volatility that we use for option trading. We all, the what's the, you know, the way you do it always has been close to close. But we also know that some stocks trade up 10%, down 10%, and finish unchanged. There's a lot more there than zero. You know, so, I mean, I'm curious as how you, I don't know which is right. I know you have to pick one and do it. But it's sort of odd that at this day and age, you're sort of back to close, and you're back to 5 years of history. I mean, because it seems to me that, at least in my lifetime here, that sometimes trends are really a decade. I mean, clearly the after 2008, market goes up, Fed pours money in, interest rates are zero, you know, puts are expensive, calls are cheap, market just trickles up. That was a 10-year trend. The 1968, after Bretton Woods pour money into the system, that was surely a trend, to 1981, for God's sake. So I don't know that the 5 years I would even I'm not arguing it. I would have not never argued with that dude statistically, but it seems odd to me, Kevin. I mean, what do you think?
Well, you can have a couple of different things. You can have a macro trend line, but if you're looking for what to do in the short run, then you have to squeeze down that cycle a little bit. What I think it means is that it's not so much that, you know, as you identified a 10-year trend, it's not so much that that's not right, but it's that the behavioral aspects of trading change faster than that. So what people do about it versus what the phenomenon is may be radically different, and they may have discovered that in their numbers. Now, I'm speculating that. I don't know. I can't say that's true, because that's not a question for me. But I do think that their model must be looking at how behavior changes quickly, not necessarily that the trend line, that anything happened to the trend line. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It seems like the reason why I'm bringing up this question is it seems to me that it's the same sort of statistics we're pulling together for the virus. Most people are pulling together the ones they want to pull together. And,
Now they are, because they have to justify past behaviors. Before, what we were doing with the statistics was we didn't have valuable statistics and started looking at worst cases and said, oh my God, look what this could be. And it turned out that it was nothing more than there was serious stuff in there, but there was a whole lot of worst case could be that never happened.
What do you make? I'm starting to read some stuff about the Swedish approach to this, and
Carl's been writing about that for weeks.
Yeah, well, I read some of it, but it's I don't. The weird part is, Kevin, I've listened to people, and God, to be honest, I'm getting really tired of watching Lori Lightfoot in her really nice apartment baking and something when other people are jammed at home, but that's another story.
A very tone-deaf thing to do. Speaker Pelosi did the same thing over the weekend, and it turned into a fairly powerful ad against her.
Yeah, I just...
You know, when you're showing off the $12 a pint gelato, that's... You know, it may be cute, and your kitchen's fabulous and all, Speaker, but honest to God, that's not relating to the average person.
Kevin, I think that I go back to, I don't know if you ever read the book A Man Called Intrepid, and it has to do with the head of the British Secret Service during the war, but that's not the point. What I think a lot of people don't know, maybe don't care, is that every single piece of mail that was sent from the U.S. to Europe, I don't know about coming this way, was opened and read in Bermuda. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Didn't know that.
Mr. Weber, did you know that? I'm thinking you didn't.
Only when you've said it before on the show.
They brought, for some reason, again, this is not being, they brought an army, basically, of young ladies over to Bermuda in these big warehouses, and they said they were so good at opening the letter. They somehow steamed the thing open, Kevin, and then were able to put it back to where nobody knew it was open. I don't know, how the hell would you do that? I wouldn't have a clue. I don't have anyone near the touch to do that. Because they were looking for ink blots, which was the thing of the day. So you have to go over to magnifying glass, because anything...
Sure, it would be like little micro barcodes today.
And then they said the hardest thing was to... The reason how they could tell there was something in the letter is if you had nothing to write about, it was very obvious. The letter itself basically sucked. So that's how they would know to look for the micro dot. Because if you're writing to your son or over there, or your daughter who's a nurse or whatever, or you're writing to somebody in Europe, you have something to write. The letter means something. But if you're just a spy trying to come up with a letter, it's hard to do. Plus the accent's bad, and the use of the words are bad, and they
it's botched colloquial, not as much the whether the English itself is any good.
But even now today, I read the thing about the two big studies in California about people with the antibodies, and I said, well, they're saying that there's 2.5% of the people have the antibodies, or 3 or 4. But now the test, they claim, has a 1.7 false positive, which, of course, if that's true, then your numbers are, when you're down, it wouldn't make a difference if you're coming up with 40% of the people, right? But when you're talking about, we think the number is 3 versus 1.5, it's a big deal. Where normally it wouldn't, so every time you do something, when you read it,
depending on the size of the sample, it's not going to be off by a double factor. What will happen, though, is you keep doing samples because, even if the samples don't show a normal distribution, which is ultimately one of the measures of how valid it is, but even if the samples don't show that, the means of all the samples will.
Okay, but I'm saying if you think that 20% of the people.
In other words, more sampling is going to. It will confirm it or not. It just starts to filter out the bias that may be in there.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, it seems to me that if you have a. Who the hell knows if the thing really is a 1.5% false positive? Say it did. If you think the society has a 30% antibody load and use this test and it turns out that it's 60, I would say that your 1.5%, is like a. A sneeze in a hurricane or something. But if you're trying to make it the difference between 1 and 2.5%, I think it makes a big difference, doesn't it?
It does. But yes, that's a substantial number. But if you flip it around, Tom, and say, well, what they're saying is that the infection rate is 55 times higher than what we have thought in the past. Fine. What if they're off by a factor of 2? Well, then it's only, 27.5 times.
Yeah. Well, I happen to believe that those studies are accurate.
It's still it means we had really, really bad data.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know, Maddie and I were, we always joust on the way in a little bit, which just gets us going in the morning. But I don't know that anybody at this point, scientist, newspaper man, half-assed Cracker Barrel philosopher, I don't think anybody, the data doesn't seem to be getting that much better. It's somewhat better. Cause I read this thing with Sweden, how they're getting roundly chastised by anybody. Are they just getting chastised because they did something different and it looks like it's working? And then the guys that did it the other way are afraid it might actually have worked better than the stuff they did? Just to give you a summary of this real quickly. Sweden did not go on this extensive lockdown like anybody else. Now, I don't know whether they've got, I'm guessing they probably don't have mass transportation or something like that. So there probably are some differences, like Maddie said, I don't know.
I would imagine there's major cities do.
Oh, okay. I'm just saying maybe there's some differences.
I've been there, but I don't imagine that you go around Stockholm without public transportation.
I don't think you've never been to Sweden? Neither have I. I've been to Denmark, but I never been to Copenhagen.
No, the beautiful Swedish models come here to find me.
Ah, yes. Anyway, on that note, but they decided they weren't going to...
On that laughable note.
Yeah, they weren't going to shut anything down, right? Yeah, but what they did was they said we're really going to protect those people that are at risk, and they buttoned down their nursing homes, not like us. We seem to have... I hate held for Carl to be right, because he usually is, but you know what? At the end of the day, Kevin, this whole idea of Carl's that these hospitals have so mismanaged the infection, and that hospital people are the ones that are spreading the damn thing, and they were for day one. Most of these people in these nursing homes, they moonlight there from a hospital. A lot of them. And he's convinced that that's where a lot of them got the problem. And now they're locking down family members, like all the family members were the problem. I don't think they were. Anyway, but anyway, what Sweden did is they said, look, this thing is essentially going to be like the common cold. We can't stop it. We're going to protect the people that need to be protected. And the rest of the people are going to go about their life, given the fact that it affects people differently. And we're going to cut the risk by, enough people get it. And when 60% of the people get it, it becomes, the word is, a herd immunity? And it seems like they're 2 weeks away from that, Kevin. Without without anywhere near the amount of problems we've had here, not to mention shutting down, not to mention the economy thing. Now, if they turn out to be right, wow. You know, it looks like they are.
Yeah, so what does it mean? It means that we just totally screwed up our economy for no good reason.
Well, but we also have screwed up the mindset a little bit. I mean, clearly, you know, he keeps using the name because she's Miss Dictator these days, in one man's opinion. I mean, Lori Lightfoot's convinced that nobody's going back to work until there's zero chance of getting this. The people from Boeing, even though they said, you got to go back to work and we're going to do spacing and we're wear masks and we're going to have some common sense. Oh, no, I still have a chance of getting it there. I shouldn't have to work. I should just get paid. Wow, Kevin. I mean, my view, unfortunately, is this thing is a 10 times worse common cold. And I don't know that. I think you got to get herd immunity because once we open up, we're going to get more cases, even if we open up a little bit. But if the hospitals are, if we're able to take care of people that have the issues, one way or the other, I don't know how you stop, Kevin. And the idea that, you know, we're not going to open up any schools till we can guarantee no teacher, no kid. Come on. I don't, where's that in the cards? Do you see?
Well, it isn't, and it never was the intention. And so that's a total move of the goalposts by some people because, it, you know, if you go back to the beginning, it was always flatten the curve, flatten the curve, flatten the curve. And I won't say that didn't happen because, you know, there's some evidence that it did. Although, you know, I think one of the points Carl has made consistently is that by the time we were doing that, by the time we were taking all these actions, we were already at the point where it was going to happen the way it happened and it was going to downturn. Sort of like the lagging effect of, you know, economic policy is,
right.
You know, by the time you move to address a recession, the forces are already happening to correct it anyway.
Well, that was the big downfall of the McNamara guys where they thought you could fine-tune the economy. Remember that term? You'd fine-tune the economy. This is a quick economic history lesson. Something like this or something like what happened in 2008 is not your normal recession, I wouldn't say. Most of your recessions are business cycle recessions where things get too hot and then all of a sudden they cool down. The guys that borrowed on the edge, they go in trouble. You slow down for a little bit and then you start building up a little bit. And that's just a cycle. It's just a... Nobody's really been able to get that out of any kind of real, certainly a free economy. And with the original Keynesians, the new Keynesian guys, they thought that if you realized that the economy was heating up, maybe a little too quick, and you all of a sudden say raise taxes or lowered government spending, that you could essentially fight that wave a little bit. And instead of having the sine wave where you go up a bunch and down a bunch, you could essentially cut the tops off and the bottoms off, Kevin. That was the thought all through the 60s.
But the idea was that, you know, you got to get the wave when it's forming,
right.
Not, you know, not when there's a wave.
Well, yeah, so
it's too late then.
Well, the idea is you're
and that's always been the problem. Yeah, you know, just to shift gears, I just, you know, one of the fallacies, and this is, I'm seeing this with governor after governor, especially ours here in Michigan, is that they continue to look at this on a state by state basis rather than a county by county basis. And I took the state of Michigan's own numbers. They're divided into 8 healthcare regions, and the two that encompass the Detroit metro area are totally different looking than every other region that
right.
in the state. And if you know if any of the listeners click on the chart that's in there, you'll see that it's, you know, the idea that the western part of the state needs to be shut down while the eastern part of the, you know, just because the eastern part of the state, that's like the you know, the parent that says I'm cold and makes all the kids put on a coat.
Well, yeah, but I still, Kevin, we have to be prepared for if you do open up the western part of the state, especially if you start bringing in more tests at the same time to see how you're doing, you're going to find more people that have it.
You're going to find more people who
test positive,
had it already. You're definitely going to increase how it's spread. But the question is, you know, if I look at the just the overall the area, the 10 counties that sort of surround where I live, we are at 0.07% diagnosed. So multiply that by 14. Say we're way off. Multiply that by 14. That gets us to 1%.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, instead of 7.07%.
But the mentality,
how much better than that is it going to get before we do open it?
But you're
going to
get,
and I would say, I would offer you that the answer is it isn't going to get any better than that. So either we're never going to open it, or we should be opening now.
I would move that you, by the way, I agree with you, but I'm still going to come back at you. I would move that you listen, God, I hope it's not on tape somewhere, but it's got to be. Listen to Jay Pritzker's news conference on Sunday. And put you up on the podium, and you know what? Sometimes when you tell the truth, you have to tell the truth. I'm sure that the group out in front of him was balanced, male, female. God, Kevin, these four or five lady reporters got on him about the masks. And what if one more death, and why shouldn't people be wearing? They got on him like they were stomping on his chest. There was no thought of what you just said. If you brought that up in that room, God help you. The whole idea was, no, those people should stay home. They shouldn't come anywhere near my kids or me or whatever. I tell you what, Kevin, we've shoved public opinion to a spot where, what is it, the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost have taken the last train to the coast. Any kind of logic or any kind of a thing that this thing is eventually going to make its way through. We're going to beat it by many different ways, but we're not going to stop the next person from getting it, just like the common cold. We tried that. It's not happening. And the people say we're going to have a vaccine in 6 months. They're out of their mind, unless some miracle happens.
But if
you or I were to get up in front of that room and say what you just said, if you were the governor of Western Michigan, and you did that on a Monday, and Wednesday the amount of tests showed 10 more people with the disease, you don't want to go to that press conference. It's brutal. What the message we've given people in terms of what their quote rights are. Their rights are to keep all. Now, of course, in the press room, this is the part about human beings that always amuses me and frightens me. The people in the press room are sitting right next to each other. They're not wearing masks. It's all about, like Lori getting her hair cut. It's all about somebody else. I mean, Audrey's friend, who was arguing with me about this, she's a smoker. She's, I don't want anybody next to me coughing without a mask. Or I don't really want them there if they have a mask. I said, well, you're a smoker. You cough. She goes, well, that's a smoking cough. I said, no. You cough. Well, that's a smoking cough. It's not going to hurt anybody. That's not the point. That is not the point.
Go to the grocery store and tell that to the people around
you.
Yeah.
I said, so the same way with the guy at the Tripoli Tampa, I was getting carry out. He's fixing the chairs. He goes, everybody should stay home. I go, you're not home. Well, I'm here by myself fixing chairs. You're not home. Everybody,
and for all of the people in the press conference, in the Pritzker press conference, stay home. You know, I'm not making you go out.
Right.
I just want to go out.
But you see,
if you're still that frightened, you know, sissy. Go ahead. Stay home.
That's the part that I've been really.
You mentioned Lori Lightfoot's haircut. I was fortunate. I found somebody that, who loves me, that I trust enough to, take amateur blade to my hair. And, so I did give myself a haircut a couple of days ago.
Do you look like you were just on chemotherapy?
Nah, I'm fine.
You gotta be
kidding. I'm fine. I've been getting it cut shorter anyway. I just put a blade on, cut the whole damn thing.
I got mine cut like a day before all this happened. don't know what possessed me to do that, but anywho. But I'm saying, but no, Kevin, what is rocking through society right now? Well, you just said, if you feel uncomfortable, you stay home. That's not what these people are hearing. That is not what they're hearing. They want the Cubs to guarantee them that they will not get this at a game, or they're going to sue them. That's where we're at here, not where you are.
Yeah, well, you know what? Bite me. my attitude towards that.
Well, I'm saying, but...
Don't go. You don't have to go to the Cubs game if you don't want to.
But that's not where we're
more
at.
More seats for me. Seats for us.
That's not where they're at. We have pushed people the wrong way here, is what I'm saying.
Well, and we have a lot of people who recognize that we've pushed too far. So, you know, they're on... we have people on that end of the spectrum, and then we have people that want us to all stay home for more months until this is completely eradicated.
While they get paid,
and they're on that end of the spectrum, and you know, I'd like to have a sense for the middle, but I don't because no. I can't get out and talk to people about it.
SP futures down 34, NASDAQ futures down 90. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. S&P futures up 36.50. NASDAQ futures up 99. So we're trying to break this really pretty awful sell-off streak we have here. But as we had a listen to one guy on TV who's a billionaire, and I said, what do you think about the market? He said, well, the market's down 15% and society's down 40%. What do you think? Let's hope that's not true, Mitty. But I'd say that's a fairly adept analysis, wouldn't you?
I would, yeah.
Anyway, so Dow futures up 272. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 104. That's 1%. These guys were all down like 2.5% yesterday. FTSE up 83, 1.5%. CAC around up 20. That's only 0.4%. So they're the laggards. Nikkei down 142, 0.7%. Shanghai up 16. That's 0.6. Hang Seng up 99.4. So not really major rallies there, considering we're trying to bounce back here. Again, as a way of review, yesterday Dow Jones down 631, 2.7%, S&P down 86, 3%, NASDAQ down 297, 3.5. Bonds today, 0.58, a 10-year yield, the Bund, minus 0.45. Japan has ducked under zero to minus 0.005, so they keep flopping over that zero line. Oil, we do something different today. Oil's down 23 cents, 11.34. Brent up 5.19. Natural gas 180. RBOB 57 cents. However, I'm going to bring up, just for everybody here, when you look at oil, be careful, because I've had nothing but phone calls. How do I buy oil at 11 bucks? You don't want to buy oil at 11 bucks, because that's the June delivery, okay? The June delivery is 11.29. July is 19.94. And it spins up in a contango all the way out to... actually, this isn't a contango. It goes up. It shouldn't be going up this much as you go out. 3208, June of 2021. So if you want to buy oil out a long distance, you're not getting this price. This price is unusual because of the jam up in the system because people aren't using it. So it's not like IBM that's going to be the same thing 10 years from now. Oil is not. So, I've had nothing but people call me saying if I want to get long oil for the next 5 years, what do I do? And I really, if you're going to do that, the best we've come to, and we'll talk to this about Russell when he comes in, but maybe the XLE, the bigger oil companies, and that's sloppy as well. But you can't go buy 10-year oil unless you want to somehow figure out a way to build yourself a storage facility next to the other ones and run around and fill it up for $11 a barrel and then hang on to the thing for a decade. That's the only way you can do it. And by the way, none of us can do that. Eddie, what do you got for us? Well, I'm going to do gold first. Gold is up 34, 17, 21. It's been very volatile. We're right around 1,700 here for several days now. Silver up 18 cents at 1,506. Copper up 2 cents, but still at 225. You know, copper's not doing so hot. So what do you got, Eddie? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have one issue in the area, and that's on the south side. Looks like the inbound side of I-94 at Dalton Avenue, there is a crash that's causing a bit of a slowdown as folks navigate around that. But everything else is nice and quiet. No issues coming in on the Ryan. I-57 looks good, as does the Stevenson. Eisenhower's all quiet. Northside expressways are quiet. Lakeshore Drive's quiet. And off the expressways were quiet. Just that one crash on the Bishop Ford inbound at Dalton Avenue is the only thing to report right now. Weather today, some sunshine early, and then we'll have some rain move in. It'll be warmer inland, mid-60s inland, but downtown a high of 56 with some showers later on. Right now it is mostly cloudy and 41 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, going to be a hot one today. Sunshine with a high of 93. Right now it's clear and 60. On this day in sports history, Chief, April 22nd, 1959, the White Sox beat the Kansas City Athletics 20-6, but it was highlighted with an 11-run inning, and what made that interesting is they scored those 11 runs in one inning on one hit.
Wow.
They walked 10 times, and the Athletics committed 3 errors. Talk about an inning from hell.
I have to ask, was Thomas pitching?
I'm wondering how long that inning lasted, like 2 hours?
Oh, God.
With 10 walks in one inning?
What was Thomas's record in softball? How many he walked in one inning?
I just remember Dr. J yanked him, I think, after he walked in his second run.
Yeah.
On this date in 1990, former University of Illinois quarterback Jeff George, we remember him.
Yeah.
He was the number one pick in the NFL draft by the Indianapolis Colts on this date in 1990. And lastly, the following year, 1991, on this date, April 22nd, Frank Thomas hit the first home run at the new Comiskey Park. Chief.
When did that open? It's got to be 20 years, right?
1991. I would say that's 29 years.
Yeah, well. Kevin, I was watching your buddy the other night, Joe Theismann, absolutely gushing over the pick of Tony Mandarich by the Packers.
Yep.
Ahead of Barry Sanders.
Probably figured he could continue to use steroids indefinitely.
He was picked ahead of Barry Sanders. God, that's the Packers.
Yeah, there are just some times where you have a draft that you can't live down, no matter what you do. I noticed last night that the I think it was the on one of the ESPN channels that the 2017 NFL draft was on. Now I personally find it impossible to sit and watch the current draft.
Yeah.
I have no idea why anybody would go watch the 2017 draft.
Well, the ones that I was watching the 89 the other night, that was real fast. It was real quick. I mean, I had no problem watching it.
Right, but if you want to go way back, you know, to when some stars were taken, that's fine. But 2017, you know, I know who all these people are. I don't need to watch that again. You know, take me back to the famous quarterback draft. You know, with that you know ended with Marino and started with who was the first one in that? Was that Elway?
It was Elway.
Yeah.
And Jim Kelly was a part of that too, I believe.
Yep.
Jim Kelly was in there, and you know some other guys who had careers, whether they you know that may not have been as spectacular, but I think you had what was the guys from Penn State? He does college football now. Todd Blackledge. You had O'Brien on the Jets. So, yeah, I don't think any of them is what you would consider a complete flop, you know, the guys that never played. But but not all of them were that good, but at least they all managed to be starters for a while.
Yeah, I think the Patriots quarterback that took him to the Super Bowl against the Bears.
Tony Eason.
Yeah, I think
Tony
he was part of that draft,
Illinois.
Too.
He was in there, too, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like 6 guys taken in the first round.
Well, the whole show for me, because I don't like as much of the show. They had good guys. They had the young Chris Berman, even Joe looked pretty young, Joe Theismann, and they would each team would have like 3 guys at a desk, not some army, and they'd go to somebody and they picked, and they'd show a bunch of films of the guy and they'd go on to the next guy. It was fun to watch. Rather than this massive lead up and all the people sitting there and they could show their faces and nobody was there, I don't think. I mean, I don't think any of the players were there just in 89. But then your two buddies, of course, got a big thing, Kevin. Jimmy and Jerry at their finest. Those two guys. I tell you what, Jerry had to have some work done because he looks the same now as he did then. Just saying.
Either that or there's a picture in his attic that's aging
something
terribly.
But the two of them, when they picked Troy Aikman, they said he's special, and they were right. You know, Hall of Famer when you pick
and
him.
I think he had like a rookie year from hell, too, where everyone just completely gave up on him. And then, obviously, the rest of the team around him was great, and he kind of grew into the role and became a very good quarterback, a Hall of Famer.
Well,
he did. And the catch with him, the interesting part was that they had just taken Steve Walsh. So they had their rookie out of Miami, and their attitude was, yeah, well, that's fine. Aikman's too good to pass up. So they didn't pass on him, and they wound up trading Walsh. And where'd he go? Cleveland.
I think so. I'm not sure.
I think you might be right. I think it might have been Cleveland. I'd have to look it up. He bounced around.
So, you know, point being that, you know, they you know, clearly were drafting the best player available. They didn't care about whether they had the position already covered, in their minds they did, because they had, you know, like the previous year's first-round quarterback.
Well, the
talk about building a team through the draft, though. That those early 90s Cowboys teams. I mean, Hall of Fame running back, Hall of Fame receiver, Hall of Fame lineman on both sides of the ball, Hall of Fame quarterback. I mean, they just, it seemed like they didn't miss on anything. They had a great tight end in Jay Novacek, a great fullback in Moose Johnston. They were just loaded. And then they would, you know.
They didn't miss, and they had all of their picks and pretty much all of Minnesota's, too.
Well, the years before that, when they were good every year in the Tom Landry era, and Staubach and those guys, and wasn't just a coach, what they would do, just other teams, when every, well, sort of does this now, but they were the only team that would have huge open tryouts every summer for anybody that didn't land anywhere else, because they never had a. They were like the Bears in the early 80s. They never had a pick over, you know, less than, you know, whatever, 15, 18.
So far, always picking near the top of the draft, yeah.
Yeah, and so they would average, I think I read the statistics, a guy would make the team virtually every year, and a guy would be a starter every, like, 4 years. So they would pick up the odd player by having this massive tryout. They got him, like, one more draft pick. It's sort of like the Patriots, although they do manage, because they're pretty good at judging their people, getting picks from other people. I did read this thing once, Matty, must have been pouring rain one day. I read it for like an hour. It was unreal how the Patriots, in the, with only seven rounds now, in the fourth, fifth, sixth round. Anyway, they got this system that you guys would know, not me. It's like based on 1 to 20 or something, where 20 is, you know, you're on a practice squad, and you do special teams twice a year when eight guys get hurt. That's like a 20. You work your way up to, you know, one is a rookie all pro. And anyway, they were talking about they would get rid of this guy in the fourth round for 2 fifth rounds. And then the fourth round would go to the Bears, say. And actually, the Bears aren't so bad in the middle round. And that guy, they'd use a pick, and he's washing dishes at somewhere today. And then the 2 fifth rounders that the Patriots got, one was at least a special teams guy, and one was was a 40-man roster, you know, eight times last year or something. I mean, the pick they got rid of comparing to the one they picked up in these late rounds was they won like every time, and they constantly were getting guys out of the fifth and sixth rounds that once in a while they'd even get a starter, which, you know, really makes a difference when you're not drafting that high. I mean, you're not getting the Walter Payton, the Dan Hampton, those kind of guys. You got to get starters around you anyway, right? I mean, you're the Bears.
You need to find new starters, and they have been really, really good at it.
Well, when you're watching, we want to talk about this a little bit, Kevin. We're watching the Bulls thing, okay? The last year or whatever, and
the last dance.
Last Dance. None of that would ever have happened if Michael Jordan didn't get hurt. Was it his sophomore year, and the team was absolutely horrible without him. And they got a high enough pick to get Scottie Pippen. I mean, they still would have been okay. I mean, probably better than okay with Jordan. But without Pippen, they had everybody in the NBA in those days, every team had a star. The pretty good teams had two stars, and the Bulls always had three. They had Kukoc for a while, and they had first time through, and Rodman was pretty much a star.
Well, they had Horace Grant, who was very good.
And I'm saying, but I mean, without... You know, Batman's, you know, whatever the guy's name was, you know, Robin. Without Pippen, I think they would have been, I don't know if they win all those finals, just with Jordan.
Oh, I'm sure they don't.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely sure they don't. And, you know, Krause had to maneuver to get Pippen, too. That, you know, he had to trade.
Yeah.
And they worked out a deal with Seattle, and Seattle drafted Pippen, and the Bulls drafted Olden Polynice, who I think was Virginia big man, and they had the trade worked out ahead of time and executed it. So, you know, that was a really good move. That was probably Jerry Krause's best draft, because there were a couple of other times that they had some first round picks and didn't make good on them. You know, most notably, after they were already good, they owned a pick via trade that got them Stacey King, who was, you know, that was in the lottery, and he was considered a really, really great prospect coming out of Oklahoma, and he was a contributor on their teams, but he was never a great player.
No, he was okay.
He would have given them that big man that really made them at the time that we thought would make them formidable. So, you know, what filling in the blanks. You know, it was picking up a John Paxson when they needed a guard who could effectively play opposite Jordan. It was picking up Steve Kerr at the time they got him. It was, as you watch some of those old games that they've been showing on there, and you see all these guys coming off the bench. Some of them are veterans, and some of them are young guys, but they almost all of them panned out. You know, even a guy like Craig Hodges, who did exactly one thing, was shoot. But yeah, he was perfect for that team because he could hang out in the corner. Go ahead, collapse on Jordan. We'll get him the ball.
Yep. Yeah, I mean,
trading Will Perdue for Dennis Rodman, knowing that Phil Jackson could sort of manage that, and Jordan and Pippen could sort of keep that in line to the extent that you needed it to be in line. He's still going to do Dennis Rodman's
stuff.
Yeah,
there was
stuff,
no completely, couldn't stop him from being Rodman, but you could contain it a little bit.
Yep.
I was stunned. What do you guys mean?
You got three great years out of him.
You brought it up yesterday. What was the deal? I mean, Magic Johnson signed at the time, everything's timing in this world, as you, you know, be careful here with the timing, with the Fed pouring his money in there. We may end up with inflation 2 years from now. People are going, where the hell did that come from? I think we probably will, not just may, but hopefully I'm wrong. But when Magic Johnson signed his contract, it was $1 million a year for 25 years, and everybody said, holy bleep, Batman, how could anybody get paid that much? Well, the timing was 3 years later, we had so much inflation in the economy that $1 million a year would put him, what, Manny? 50th highest paid player, and he had to be, you know, one of the top three easy. Is the best before Jordan came along. I mean, he was probably him and Kareem, and who else was that good?
Larry.
Yeah,
they had this Bird fellow who was okay.
Yeah, he was, but I'm saying he was, but the Lakers didn't make him ride that out for 25 years. And now, and this thing with Pippen, I mean, I didn't realize that Pippen's dad had a stroke. He came from a big family. His dad had a stroke. His older brother, did he have an industrial accident or something? They had two people in a wheelchair in the house. So when Pippen signed his deal for 7 or 8 years, he knew that he could support his family and get out of basketball with some money. Well, as time went by, that number was clearly off.
Well, yeah, they said in the 97-98 season, he was the 122nd highest paid guy in the league.
Yeah.
But then, and he's probably like, but then Reinsdorf, the best
player. Reinsdorf's only defense for himself was, I told him not to sign that contract. Come on, Jerry. I mean, you know,
that he did, but I recall at the time too. He also told Pippen, "Don't come back. If you do sign this, then it's a deal. Don't come back." Now, should he have paid him more? Yeah, he did the same thing with Jordan, though. And then at the end, when Jordan was working on year by year, he was making like $30 to $35 million a year because you could go over the cap to sign. In those days, you'd go over the cap. It wasn't a hard cap to sign your own guys. So. You know, they made it up for with Jordan. They might have been able to do the same thing with Pippen, except that they just didn't continue to employ him at all.
Well, yeah.
And he didn't last much longer at that. The other thing to remember about Pippen when he signed his contract was he had back surgery, and he wasn't sure how long his career was going to last.
Well, I think
he wanted some security out of that too, and that wasn't mentioned in the documentary, but I remember that being true at the time.
Well, I'd be a horrible basketball or baseball owner because I would never have a something that says I got a guaranteed contract like that. I would never do that. I mean, as an owner, and people would of course vilify me as an owner. The whole idea is I'm paying you because you're on a scale of 1 to 10, you're an 8. All right, and this is the number for an 8. Let's sign this deal. But you know what? Every other year, we're going to have an adjustment here because if you go to 10, I owe you more. If you go to 6, this is too much. I mean, or 5. I mean, everybody gets that. So what's the point of picking a number? It's like in football is even more bizarre because you sign somebody, a little less now, but back in the day, you signed somebody for a 5-year contract. All it was a salary cap because if you got better, you didn't get any more dough, and if you got worse, they cut you. So anybody who would sign a long-term contract back in those days had to have a brain of a flea, for God's sake.
No, football was all about upfront money.
Well, it wasn't
and
then.
It still is. It's well, how much is guaranteed? How much do they give me the day I sign? because they're the from the management side, they're managing the cap.
I'm talking singletary days.
So they can spread it out. Now, when you cut the guy loose, then you have to accelerate the cash that you've already paid. If you've been spreading it out over the life of the cap, now you have to come back in and you have to accelerate it and take the cap hit. But that becomes a 1 year phenomenon. So if it's a big hit, then you just say, okay, I'll take my medicine and go.
I don't think back in Singletary days the bonus was that much, where it was like 3 years pay like it is now.
No, now it is, but yeah. Back then it was because the players learned.
Yeah.
They learned that the non-guaranteed contract didn't do them very much.
I mean, I just think at some point you would have had to say to Pippen, you know what, here's a bonus for God's sake. I couldn't have let that happen. It was me, especially when you're making so much money on the team at the time. Of course, he claims because he was paying Jordan, he wasn't making any money. But Jerry Reinsdorf, did he ever make any money? According to him,
I doubt it.
Yeah,
the Bulls have been a cash cow for him since the '80s.
Yeah,
I mean. He's made so much money off the Bulls. Even after Jordan for 20 years, they were still selling out games. I mean, it's just crazy.
I would say that when everybody says this is the last dance, it's all about where do they get rid of Jackson and all these people. I'm going to say that in 90, where are we at? 97, 98? 98, 99 season, the Bulls' profit was 2 to 3 times what it was in the year they won. Because they still had all those people, and they weren't paying anybody anything. And I'm going to say they did amazingly better the next year.
I think you're right. For probably the next
Also the question of what was off the books. You know, what it's always a matter of what goes on the books and what is off the books. So how much of licensed merchandise, for example, is shows up on the team's profit statement? I would imagine all of that is, but teams have been notoriously, if they have a stake in say broadcast the company that broadcasts them. Then okay, that can make the money, that's not on the books because you're just paying yourself for broadcast.
Well, the concessions are usually off the books. I have a question. I don't know the answer to this. It's probably more of a Jordan question. If I ever went to the stadium, which I have no intention of doing, and walked in, and somehow or another I needed to buy a Jordan jersey for somebody, which I would never do for myself, and plunk down my $200 for it, is Jordan getting any money? Or is that just all NBA properties?
I don't know the answer for sure. I suspect it's all NBA properties if it's a Bulls jersey, but there've been a lot of battles over name, image, likeness, so I'm really not sure.
I'm almost 100% sure that he gets a cut.
Everybody does, or just him?
Everybody.
Does it matter if you're retired or whether you're playing?
Because they track jersey sales based on player. You can pull it up right now, year by year. And I'm almost positive that every player with their likeness on there gets a cut.
You know who made a boatload of money last year? I was, you know, of course, I kick up Yahoo as my homepage at home, not because there's anything good about it, other than the fact you get all this trivia of information. Marilyn Monroe made like $10 million last year for her likeness. I thought somewhere along the line you like lost your likeness. Maybe you don't if you keep at it. I don't know more about this than me, Kevin.
Yeah, you definitely don't lose it. No.
So we only
here's the other the real interesting thing on the Last Dance though, and the thing that's kind of fun to watch is where we left off the first weekend is that Pippen's sitting out. His teammates aren't real happy about that. Jordan, they're not playing very well, and Jordan can be insufferable enough. But when they're losing, he's totally insufferable. You got Rodman being Rodman. You have all of this stuff. Everybody hates the management, and it's total chaos at the beginning of the season. And watching how this comes together, because those of us who remember who were watching at the time and remember the championship run, by the time those guys were in the playoffs, they were a pretty together basketball team, at least on the floor.
I found that really interesting. I mean, they ended up winning 62 games and easily winning the division, and they had no problem in the first two rounds of the playoffs, so they absolutely figured it out. But yeah, it was a lot of turmoil in October, November, and even into Christmas, as I recall.
What I still don't.
Yeah, but I think in the end, that's going to reflect really well on Phil Jackson. And you know, Jackson was always great at managing the egos anyway. And, you know, to a great extent, that became Phil Jackson's ego was part of that equation as well. So,
I think,
you know,
that team...
I don't know if it just became a total us against them type of mentality that never would have lasted into the next season, or what. And that's, you know, I'm kind of interesting to revisit all that and see what I think.
I'm going to lob one out here. I'm going to say that it was blamed on the little guy, but it was all Reinsdorf realizing that the year or two after he was going to make more money than he got, because of the season tickets and the skyboxes and not having to pay anybody. I mean, how much?
Well, I don't think there's ever any question about who ultimately had could pull the strings there, because he was also the guy that could make, you know, that wound up getting Jackson to come back, you know, that got involved, and so Jackson came back for another year when that didn't look like it was going to happen.
Well, I think he thought the press and the fandom would have actually revolted that year. But then when you get them the, this is for sure the last year, blah, 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 at least you prepare people. But, I mean, Jackson made $7.5 million that year, right? What do you think Floyd made the next year? Half a mil?
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, and obviously he didn't have Jordan's 30. So, I mean, the next year all you did was take in receipts and you didn't write many checks, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know, one of the other lessons here, though, is that Jerry Reinsdorf and then eventually his son, you know, have they ever put together on their own a really good management team? The first one was the best one they had. And, you know, a lot of that was that, you know, they made sure that not only when Jackson took over, that he had Tex Winter and he had John Bach,
yeah,
and, you know, other good assistants along the way that they added into the equation. But since then, have they had a what you'd call a good head coach? I
or
guess
the Sox either. Same with the Sox.
Okay.
But what is it? Are they going to do the same thing for, I mean, Ozzie Guillen? How did that all fall apart?
Well, Ozzie was bound to crash and burn, I think.
Probably, yeah.
You know, I mean, it was sort of like Billy Martin. That Billy Martin could never last in one place for a while, even though the Yankees kept rehiring him. In short doses, he can be effective. He can bring a group of people to life, but over the long haul, he's just not.
But he's
going to wear everybody out.
But he's a big boozer and everything else. But I mean, Reinsdorf kept Jerry Krause as the bad guy. But in the end, he had no problem getting rid of him.
I thought it was funny that Krause, we gotta go, but I thought it was funny in the documentary it said Krause was a baseball scout and he went to Reinsdorf and said, I would like to be the GM of the Bulls.
Yeah.
How the hell does that happen? And Reinsdorf's like, yeah, sure, you can be the GM of the Bulls.
There are people, Matty, that say, you don't ask, you don't get.
That's right.
Kevin, talk to you on Friday, buddy. SB Futures up 32, NASDAQ Futures up 97. We're trying to bounce back from these last two horrible days. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again. Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Al. Mr. Russell Rhodes, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 31. We have NASDAQ Futures up 97. We're trying to take a chunk out of yesterday's sell-off. We're about 40% of the way back. So not exactly the way back, but it's a start. We have oil settling down a little bit this morning, but we're down to $11 a barrel in the June contract. It started yesterday morning during the show. Russell, I said, "Well, this is just the expiring May. The June's still 22. Oops,
it was.
Yes.
Yeah, this is kind of a fun. You know, they're going to start listing negative strike options today.
Yeah, it's.
I'm not. I mean, that sounds like I'm joking, and I'm not. I'm going to spend after I'm done with you. I'm going to spend my day trying to figure out what's the best way to apply a. A Black-Scholes model to something that doesn't have a lower bound.
Well,
seriously, yeah. Because I got to get out my. Unfortunately, my whole textbook is in a place that I'm not allowed to go right now. But I might find an older copy of it. I want to see if there's anything in there at all about valuing options on something that can go negative.
Well, the answer is no. You don't even have to go there because.
Well, and did you know? I mean, full disclosure: did you know that futures could trade negative? I didn't, and I've been around for a while.
After I have thought about it and discussed it with my bro Dan, the president of PTI Securities, if I thought about it, it doesn't shock me. I'll tell you why.
Okay.
One of the reasons why your option model won't show that. As you realize, you know more than anybody, the Black-Scholes model is not a normal distribution. It's log normal, correct? The reason why
it's log normal with a floor on the put side.
Well, it's log normal because it can't go below zero, a stock.
Yeah.
But I think here's the way, and I was dying to have you on, yesterday, but I got you today.
You could have called me.
No, I'm saying that there's two different things, and kick me if I'm wrong here. Well, if you have a stock option, everything, the guy who buys it, guy or lady or whoever buys it, you have the right, but not the obligation to buy a stock at a certain price to a certain period of time. We have the right to sell a stock at a certain price, a certain period of time. The futures side is almost the mirror image of that. And the reason for that is, and I'll go through using corn because people know more about farming than they do about oil, probably. Even though they think they know more about oil because they put it in their car. When you have the idea of a futures market for corn is so neither the farmer nor Kellogg's has to be a speculator. The farmer buys his seed, he throws it in the ground, and he says, okay, it looks to me like, if I can get $3.50 or $4, I'm having a good year, or $5, whatever the time frame is. So he sees the futures trading on the board of trade at $5. So he says, all right, I'm going to sell those futures at $5 for 2/3 of my crop just in case I, you know, get a hailstorm here or something bad happens. I don't want to sell futures on more than I have, correct? Now, mm-hmm. So those two prices at the end of the day, come November or whenever the harvest is, those two prices are supposed to come together.
Right.
Now, the reason why you want them to come together is because if the guy's corn is now worth $5 because of the price of corn is going up to $5, the money he made on the he's making on his corn, he essentially lost on a futures contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, if you sold a futures contract, I'm sorry, at $4 and the price went to $5, you're going to lose a buck on the futures contract, but you're going to make it up on your corn. So that's the idea. So you essentially lock in the price that you sell it at.
Yeah.
So, but the person put in charge of this, in theory, is the guy who sold the contract. Because he's the guy, the farmer, and says, wait a minute, so you want me to pay $8 for this contract when the price of corn is only $4? Well, screw you. I'm just going to give you my corn. So there's a delivery process that if the prices don't come together, the delivery process forces the price to come together near the end. But no matter what it is, no matter what the futures contract is, and this is what a lot of the nuts and bolts of the, I use the term real people at the Board of Trade, not the traders, the back office.
I call them legitimate users.
Yeah, but those are the people.
The exchange doesn't like that, but.
Well, yeah. No, but where I'm going with this, let me finish and then you can tell me where I'm all wrong. The idea is nobody wants to deliver anything. Okay, it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You gotta get it, it's not on your farm, you gotta get it to Marseille, Chicago, I don't even think it's a good give up anymore. Is it Marseille, it's Buffalo, is it New Orleans probably is. It's probably 3 or 4 spots. You have to get your corn there, you have to have your corn rated, I think it's what, Class B hard or something is the normal corn.
Mm-hmm.
If you show up with Class C, well you're not gonna get $3.50 a bushel, you gotta take a 10 cent hit or 20. So this is real involved. So what the people at the Board of Trade do, is there comes a time when people want to jump to the next month, then there's this 14 days of deliverability. And what they want to see is the open interest in the contracts go down to zero, to where nobody shows up in Marseille, nobody shows up at Cushing. I mean, most people don't have a clue that if it's unleaded gas, you got to get the gas to New York Harbor. That's the delivery spot for that. So the deliveries are sloppy. So near the end, if this doesn't work right, it usually means somebody is trying to corner the storage facilities, which the guys from, Russell, who are the guys that bought Central Soya? Is it Farm, it begins with an F, guys from Italy. They tried to do that with the soybeans, was it 20 years ago, 18 years ago, where they were, mm-hmm. they grabbed all the storage facilities in Marseille, Illinois, not Marseille, Marseille, France, Marseille, Illinois. And somehow or another you couldn't get soybeans in there, so they ended up with some huge fine. This is the first time where I don't think an individual cornered the storage facility. The glut of oil.
I think the storage facility just fell apart.
Well, because you can't. Yeah. Every pipeline there is probably turned off.
No, it's there's nowhere to put this stuff.
So if you have a long contract,
and you can't dump it, you know, yeah. They had this problem during the Depression with milk.
Yeah.
And the farmers would just pour out their milk.
They're doing that now.
You can't pour out oil. And beyond that, it actually costs money to stop producing oil.
Right.
And it's all kind of come to a head here.
So the person who has the long contract, I'm almost done here, he could conceivably say, I got to get rid of this thing. I mean, I can't get a storage facility. The storage facility is too high. I mean, I just can't take the thing. Now, again, this is getting an amazing amount of media hype. You're talking about an incredible amount of this contract was liquidated when it was supposed to be, more than 2 weeks ago, right? And it's been being liquidated as you go, and there's people who hang out to the last end thinking they're going to get a nickel for it. They didn't. But I'm going to say the people who actually sold the thing down there, that's all the news, it's a minuscule amount of what ended up of that oil contract during its life. I'm going to say it's 1/1,000 of the people who owned that contract that actually waited to the last day and really got it stuck where the sun.
Here's where you hit the speed bump that I got to stop you.
Okay, fair enough.
The open interest the day before all this happened was well over 100,000 contracts.
Okay.
And as I sit here and I take little notes, when you talk, I take notes.
Yeah.
And as I sit here and take notes, I honestly don't know if that is an abnormally high number or not.
I don't either.
But I will tell you that as this unfolded and people were throwing theories out, I was jumping all over the internet trying to figure out who may have been selling, or, you know, looking at the ETF holdings. None of the ETFs held the May contract when this happened. They had already gotten out.
You're supposed to.
April 13th.
Yeah, you're supposed to.
It wasn't them.
Yeah, the last 14 days are delivery days, Russell. You're supposed to be out.
No. Yeah. I know. They get out before that. I know that. You know that. A reporter from Forbes didn't know that because they wrote an article while all this was going on blaming USO.
I don't even know. Even though we do futures, this is stupid for me to say, but I'll say it anyway. I don't even know if we would let somebody buy something after the date where everybody rolled it.
Well, you would discourage it. You would tell them that's not the front month.
Yeah, we would tell them that.
You know, unless an oil company comes to you, or, you know, a refinery that actually wants to take some delivery or something. You know, if they came to you and talked to you about what they wanted to do, you might say, "Well, yeah, well, you know, if that's really what you want to do here." But no, if it's a trader like you and me, if I were still trading oil, I wouldn't have been trading the May contract. I'd have been trading the June contract.
I would say because I would have
rolled.
But if you're the guy at the CME in charge of this, if they started the 14 days at 100,000 contracts, and on day 13 it wasn't 90 or 80, I think you knew you had a rat in your hands.
Well, my understanding is there was some calling around going on where the exchange was letting people know that, just by the way, this price can't go negative. They were giving risk managers at the big clearing firms a little heads up here. Don't think that things can hit zero and that's it.
Russell, could it happen? So, could it happen in I made the example yesterday, and again, you weren't here to run it by before I out-peeped it. The same thing I think could happen in corn if it was harvest season and all of a sudden someone dropped a huge bomb on the last lock in the Mississippi to where you absolutely couldn't get it downriver. Marseille couldn't take it. No co-op could take it. I think your future could get to zero. I don't know about negative, but it would be almost like it was negative. If you just couldn't bring it in.
Yeah, I think if you start really thinking about the theory that behind what physical commodity contracts could go negative, I think it comes down to the ability to store.
Yeah.
And oil is probably, and you know, I don't have a list of commodities in front of me, but you got to assume that crude oil is the most expensive one to store.
Well, natural gas, you know, after it's refined, then where do you store that?
Natural gas, they've been paying people. I believe you and I had this discussion that they were paying people to take natural gas off their hands because it's a byproduct of the fracking industry.
Yeah.
And they really weren't producing natural gas for profit. It was just coming out of the ground, and they were forced to capture it. And they were paying people recently to take it off their hands.
What do you do at the well end if they say we can't take it anymore in a pipeline?
You got to shut the thing down.
Yeah.
And there's an expense associated with that, and then there's an expense with – it's not like flipping a switch. There's an expense associated with making sure you ecologically do it correctly, and then there is an expense associated with ramping it back up too.
Where do you suppose, by the way, I said natural gas, I misspoke. What I meant to say, since we always talk about natural gas, is unleaded gas. Where's that backing up? I mean, clearly that's not being used, and these guys, refiners aren't going to get...
The refinery's not taking any more delivery of, crude.
I mean, we're down to 65 cents in New York Harbor. Now, there's no way on earth, if you have extra unleaded gas in Bolingbrook, that you're going to get that out to New Jersey for less than 65. Well, it won't cost you 65 cents a gallon. It'll probably cost you 20 to get it out there to deliver it to somebody for 40 cents. Why would you even do that?
I mean, I haven't. It's like one of my buddies posted yesterday on Twitter. He said, I'm getting 5 weeks to the gallon.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think you're the only person I know that's probably still doing their regular. I don't know. Are you still having to fill up on Sunday, or when you fill up on Sunday, are you not?
I would say it was at least two weeks.
Is it less?
It's at least 2 weeks now. Yeah, it's at least 2 weeks. I'm just going to work and back. I mean, and put in the garage.
Yeah, that's what I assume.
But I'm actually, as much as we're coming to work, I'm trying to be safe because I don't. I mean, I'm trying to do what other you know. A, I'm not 25, and B, you know, I mean, I do believe though, Russell, honestly, that one of these days we're all going to get it. I don't know that our method here. I was reading about the Swedish thing this last night and this morning. Mm-hmm. They feel that they've got this thing pretty well lit because 60% of their population's already had it. And then what they
my wife's a healthcare professional, and speaking to another one at a hospital in New York, where what they're doing is everybody that comes through, they're doing a chest X-ray on them, and they think 85% of the chest X-rays they're looking at, the people have been exposed.
Yeah.
And they're testing everybody. If you stub your toe and go in there, they're going to test you. So the feeling is that a lot of us have gotten it and not shown symptoms.
Yeah, it's a.
I mean, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if I've gotten it. I went to Europe in December. I flew back and forth to New York 3 or 4 times I flew back and forth to New York 3 and 4 times in December, January, and February. Four times.
I mentioned
which is an epicenter, and yeah. You know, we were talking about it at dinner last night because my oldest daughter just loves when I take her to New York, but she sees how on top of everybody, you know, you're just, it's impossible on a normal day not to physically touch somebody. Everybody's bumping into everybody.
Well, Carl is he's been going crazy with the idea that the places and that have been the epicenter of these germs has been these hospitals. I know people. Mm-hmm. There's people who've written the show, Russell, that said they were in a hospital 3 weeks ago and all they did was take their temperature. And we've been talking. She goes, "You guys have been talking on the show for 6 weeks now. How you're more contagious before you get the temperature? Why are these idiots taking my temperature and say go ahead?" I said, "I have no idea."
Yeah. My wife had a cardiac event, a small cardiac event, and the ambulance came and took her to the hospital a couple of Sundays ago, and I probably shouldn't have mentioned that because she didn't tell her parents.
Oh.
and they're back in Chicago. I hope they slept in today. When they sent her, they said, you know, do you think you have it? Or they took the temperature and all that kind of stuff, and they sent the people to the right that were there for non-coronavirus people stuff, and they sent people to the left that were there for the coronavirus, and they had different procedures in the two different areas. In my mind, it only took one person who had it who, you know, went in the wrong direction of the hospital just to ruin that part of the ER.
You know what, though, Russell? This is a weird, mm-hmm. this long debate with, not debate, actually discussion with Carl. Mm-hmm. As Carl said, look at these hospitals. They're designed for you to walk in with a heart attack. They're not designed for you to walk in with smallpox.
No.
There's no negative pressure room when you first walk in to see what the hell you've got before you bring in with the rest of the people. There's none of that, and hasn't been for years. I mean, mm-hmm. That's why people get colds and flu in hospitals. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
this is a terrible analogy, but, you know, one of the reasons I never liked going to strip clubs was I always caught a cold there.
You caught something.
it's kind of the same thing. You know, there's a lot of germs floating around in the ER as well. I haven't had to go to the hospital as much as I had to go to the strip club, so I don't really know if I always catch cold when I go to the hospital.
I know that the three
times that I moved back to Chicago and started riding the L, I would get terribly ill for a couple of days within the first couple of weeks of moving back here.
Well, you got to get that hardened body.
Always.
For me, it's always
always.
For me, it's always airplanes.
Yeah.
Where you feel a little weird.
Our buddy who
I think I've built up the immunity on that one. Plus, I always fly in the front.
Well, our buddy
it's the one thing I spend money on because I just don't. I do it too much, and I don't want to be uncomfortable.
My friend who's been on the show a few times does this international travel all the time. He lives in Singapore,
mm-hmm.
and there's been, I'm going to say, double-digit times where he flew to Japan for a meeting and was in the hotel the entire time with some huge fever and never made it to the meeting and just flew mm-hmm. back. I mean, he always, if it's a 17-hour flight, he comes up with something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're just not enough.
Yeah, no, I about once a year I get really sick on one of my international trips.
Well, I don't know the engineering of it, although I used to try and follow this stuff. But one of the reasons that the new airplanes save air fuel is they don't take as much outside air through as the old ones did. So mm-hmm. you were actually way better off on a 727 than you are on one of these new ones. Because they used to actually have people smoke on those. And you could, I mean, I don't know if you remember that, but I mean, if you were in the non-smoking section, it really wasn't all that bad because there was so much, they had it in the back and the way the air flowed through the thing, I mean, it wasn't ideal. If you went back to the can, you're like, oh, God, it's horrible back here. But you didn't, it wasn't, I mean, I can't imagine them doing one of these new planes but Russell, we have this market that's trying to stay in there. We're rallying today, even though we're coming back down. We're only up 28 now. I am absolutely stunned by looking at it because I don't know if I'm right, wrong, or in the barrel. We've got the Fed putting so much money into this thing, pumping up assets, doing stuff. And yet I look at, if we're still doing this 60 days from now, I look at half of these companies, I don't know about half, but a bunch of them are in bankruptcy court. And there was one of the guys that Dan was listening to on, was a Bloomberg yesterday. He goes, let me get this straight. The market's down 15% and the economy's down 40. What's the problem? And I'm thinking, is this guy right? I mean, it seems like, I don't know that it's not an interesting observation, but how long can we hang here? I mean, airlines last night went on and got another $1 billion. They get five from the government. What's their burn rate, Russell? If nobody's flying by Thanksgiving, I don't care how much money you give them. Do you?
No, I mean, at some point, I think that's why you're seeing some pressure to get some things reopened, because this really could turn into a catastrophe where there's just nothing else they can do monetarily to keep us going without the terrible repercussions that we always talk about that are associated with just printing money over and over again. You got a problem here? Here's some more money. It's, you know, eventually that's not going to work unless there's something going on within the economy, like some sort of productive activity or services that we pay each other for that we're not paying each other for right now. So I feel like that might, when you see Trump do his daily you know, briefings, I have a funny feeling that the economics guys are going, man, if we don't get this thing back up and running within the next 2 or 3 months, there's only so much we can do. And when he hears that, he takes the shortcut and gets up there and says, we're going to reopen this thing in 2 weeks. You know?
Well, what do you think?
Because I do think that they know that. They're not going to say it, but they know that. Within the Larry Kudlow group.
Oh, sure they do. Sure.
In Washington, D.C. They're aware of it. They're not stupid, but they're not going to go up there and say it. It'll crash the stock market.
What do you think of this? And this is one of the interesting, when I was in school, I was never an econometrics kind of guy. I liked the behavioral economics. And this is right in my wheelhouse. Not that I know what's going on or anything. This is what I studied. It's interesting. We have, in order to get people to be afraid of other people coughing and mm-hmm. to stay out of playgrounds and to somehow put up with this being jailed, you know, a family of five in Manhattan in an apartment where you can't even bring the kids down to the playground. I can't imagine what some of those houses are like. I mean, hopefully they're not all beating each other, but there's something's going on. There's a lot of yelling. Something's going on. I mean, it's way too long. I mean, your kids are kids, right?
Yeah.
Not to mention, most marriages aren't designed for 24/7. Just saying.
I'm just absolutely thrilled to be here, you know, for the sixth week now, rekindling my marriage. My wife's a really nice person. I'd forgotten that.
You know, that's the only guy who's really happy in this is Maddie's dog Venkman. He gets walked more. His gang is home. He thinks this is terrific.
I just tweeted a picture of somebody else who's very happy about this.
Yes, we retweeted it. Very cute picture. Yes. The dogs of the world love the shutdown.
Yes.
Well, this dog. I mean, I get up. She comes running upstairs and jumps in the chair in my office and spends all morning with me. She's going to be so sad. Although my new job, I'm allowed to take the dog to work. So,
cool.
Can I bring my dog there?
Sure.
Absolutely. All right. Absolutely.
We're going to the studio, baby.
Oh, God. We only have a minute before we go to break, but we'll chew on this over break. Is part of what getting people to do what you want them to do at this stage is you've imparted a dramatic fear on everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you didn't have to or whatever. I mean, there's people that will tell me, God, that guy doesn't have his mask on, like, outside walking by himself. What if he walks by somebody and a germ, like, jumps? I'm like, you got to be kidding me. But that's what they've instilled in people, okay? So my question after break is, even if we start to, quote, open things up, when are people going to be allow themselves to be opened up, if ever? SP Futures up 34, NASDAQ Futures up 103. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Mel Weber on the board. Mr. Russell Rhodes with us as well. S&P futures up 35, NASDAQ futures up 103, Dow futures up 210. So we're back. 35 to 40% of yesterday's sell-off, so not massive, but it's across the board. I got every stock in the Dow up. I got every stock in the transportation average up, except for United Airlines, down 88 cents, because they're coming out with $1 billion worth of stock they're selling. And oh, by the way, the people that are underwriting it, the Morgan Stanleys, get to buy another couple of million shares at $30-something a piece. So they got a big. I use the term warrant, although it's probably not being categorized as that. But it essentially is a warrant. Around the rest of the world, we have we got rallies, but not like we've had sell-offs. DAX is only up 77.6%. FTSE up 85.5%. That's a pretty good rally. CAC around only up 16.4%. So they're bouncing, but not really, really bouncing. Nikkei down 142.7%. Shanghai up 16.6%. Hang Seng up 99.4%. 10-year yield, 0.597, call that 0.6. It's up 0.2. Bund, minus 0.44. And Japan, pretty much dead even, minus 0.005. Oil, now I'm going to give you the, this was the May or June contract, 1166, but if you start going out a couple months, it's in the 20s, and next year it's in the very low 30s. So serious contango with the futures curve. Brent up 39 cents, 1972. Natural gas, 178. RBOB, 58 cents. Gold rallying again, up 24 bucks, 1711. Silver up 10 cents, 1498. Silver still has not gone. Gold is up a lot since we've been talking about it in the last couple of months. Silver is actually down, even though it seems like up and down. It's been 15 bucks roughly forever. Copper up 4 cents, 227. Maddie, ready for his traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. A couple of issues that have come across here. Jane Addams Tollway on the inbound side at Roselle Road, Northwest Suburbs. We have a crash involving an SUV smashing into the rear of a five-axle dump truck that's been moved to the right shoulder. No big delays from that, but a bit of a slowdown as you navigate around the crews there that are working on the right shoulder after that crash on the Jane Addams.
Texting?
Good question. I-90 eastbound at Roselle Road. Since there's no traffic, I imagine they were going pretty fast when he hit him from behind. So it's not like it was a slow little 10-mile-per-hour fender bender, I wouldn't think. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower looks good, as does the Stevenson. Earlier crash on the Bishop Ford this morning is all clear. Ryan looks good. Off the expressways, Western Suburbs, Roosevelt Road at Route 83, there is a crash, and that's a relatively busy intersection. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, clouds early, could have some rain in the forecast, and then we'll warm up a bit. 56 will be our high in the city, close to the lake. But as you get further inland and into the suburbs, we could hit the mid-60s today, reaching a high of 65 further west. But downtown, a high of 56. Right now, it's overcast and 42 degrees. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 93 today. Right now, it's clear and 60. One note on sports that we haven't talked about yet, Chief, is apparently Rob Gronkowski, Patriots.
Yeah.
Future Hall of Famer is coming out of retirement, and he was traded from the Patriots to the Buccaneers and will join Tom Brady in Tampa. The Patriots get a fourth-round pick from the Bucs, and the Bucs get Gronk and a seventh-round pick in return.
Gee. Well, I thought if he came out of retirement, he could go anywhere he wanted.
He was still under contract.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
They well, still he, was, he wasn't getting paid, though.
No, because he retired, but they still had the rights to him.
Okay, yeah. So, all right. Well, there you go. So
apparently, it's like he doesn't really have a long commute to work because he lives down there, right?
I think that's correct. Yeah, and then obviously,
and you know, the WWE thing wasn't really working out for him because of the lockdown, I guess. Although, have you guys? You know, I'm a big wrestling fan. Have you guys watched it at all? They're doing the same stuff without audiences.
I have not watched it, but I did see the highlights, and it's kind of weird looking without any crowd.
Last time I watched
it
one,
is weird.
Last time I watched one, Bruiser was still wrestling.
Oh my goodness! Great.
And who was the other guy?
I grew up with Jerry Lawler as, you know, like the big idol down in Memphis. So you couldn't help but at least be aware of it.
Who was the other guy? The Baron von Raschke was there.
The Claw.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, maybe, you know, if since there's no sports to report on, maybe you should be reporting on, you know, they actually, the Memphis sports section, when I was growing up, would have the Monday Night Wrestling results in the sports section.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
Well, your buddy Tom Brady almost got pinched yesterday.
I saw that. He was working out in a public park that had been closed, and he was given a citation because the park was closed, and he was doing sprints or whatever he was doing.
Actually, I thought he didn't get a citation.
I heard he got a citation. I'm sure it was probably a warning if you're Tom Brady.
I thought he got booted but didn't get written up, but okay. Who knows?
Yeah. Either way, he was told to leave, and he either got a small fine or a slap on the wrist, of course, 6 feet apart.
Yeah.
He didn't play the whole don't you know who I am card?
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Yeah, that's why he didn't get written up.
But by the way, real quick, if football does resume in 2019 here, or 2020, I should say, Tampa Bay has two of the top five receivers in the game already. Now they have, if Gronk is even close to what he was before he retired, they have, you know, one of the best tight ends, if not the best tight end in the game. And you have a quarterback that if he has anything left and an offensive line to give him any sort of semblance of time, they have some weapons on offense.
Do they have an offensive line that's decent?
I have no idea. I don't know. They don't have a big, you know, name running back. I don't know if they have a good offensive line. But I do know that that Evans and Godwin, those receivers, are unreal. And that was with Jameis Winston just chucking the ball. If they have a quarterback that can actually, you know, put it on them and doesn't turn it over every other pass, they could be scary.
Is Winston still there? They dump him.
No, he's gone.
All right. So who's
behind? They've got since all of this has happened, they've gone from being just in the pack to the third best odds to win the Super Bowl.
Wow.
Who's their behind Kansas City and Baltimore.
Who's their backup
QB? They've got the highest odds of an NFC team right now to win the Super Bowl in Vegas, if you could go bet there.
What about the Bears?
What about the Bears?
Just saying.
They went from $100 giving you a $5,500 profit to $100 giving you $900 if they win the Super Bowl.
So, Russell, you're not a litigious sort of dude, or are you? So what if you and I and Maddie owned Russell and Chief and Matt's Blue Jeans store, and we're forced to shut down, and we go Sunday morning to Walmart or Myers, like I was, hauling people around, and you see people buying jeans. Or you own a furniture store
and you go to Costco
and you see somebody buying furniture. How pissed off are you? I'd be, like, really pissed off. Now, my question is, can I get, if I owned a furniture store or a Blue Jeans store, can I go to the Restaurant Depot, which I happen to be able to get into? Maddie. Can I take my friend Maddie Weber with and buy 20 cases of various canned goods, like a Menards, get a shelf, put them up in my furniture store, and all of a sudden, now I'm okay because I have food in there, or what? And what? These people are making all these decisions. These people are making all these decisions. Walmart, how long ago didn't even have food? 5 years? Now all of a sudden...
Probably a decade, but yeah, when they got into groceries, they changed the game.
But I'm saying, why? How do these other people put up for this? Put up with this without... I'm not saying go getting your, do anything violent, but boy, oh boy. I mean, now I got no dough and I'm paying my rent every month and these guys are having record sales.
They're essential services and they're still up and running and... Yeah, it's, and beyond that, you know, my mother-in-law has discovered that she can buy groceries online.
Well, but the...
You know, and she had never done that before. That might be a complete habit change that...
Maybe.
Out here in Hinsdale, we've got a great local grocery store that people have gone to for generations. It's still open, but, you know, and you can do some online ordering. They're doing the best that they can around that. But, you know, if you're using the Amazon Fresh thing and it becomes a new habit, that's going to hurt it's going to hurt all the small businesses.
Well, they have a real nice Pepe's out in Homer Glen that is open for carryout. There was nobody there, yet the Chipotle had a huge line at the drive-up window.
Of course.
And I'm going to say Pepe's is way better than Chipotle's. I mean, but anyway, I'm, you know, I guess the burrito's a burrito. But I guess what I'm saying is this is so uneven, and yet why are people taking this laying down? What do you mean I can't be open?
Well, I don't think they are, and I think that they're starting not to. That's why you're seeing these reopen protests.
Yeah, I don't...
I don't think they're taking it laying down anymore, and they're getting eviscerated by the press when they go, you know, it's time to, you know, when they go to protest and say, look, let's reopen this thing.
Well, the difference,
I think there's a happy medium in there.
Well, you know what the medium, medium isn't, Russell, and this is, again, this is, I very seldom say something like this, but I'm going to, you know where the medium isn't? I am so tired of listening to people getting paid, telling how the people that aren't getting paid, watching their businesses and their life crumble in front of them, should be happy with this. And just as long as they don't infect me, it's okay. Every one of these reporters bitching at the governor, they're all still getting a paycheck, as much as it is the reporter.
Oh yeah,
everybody when they close the schools for two more months, they're all getting a paycheck. And yet, how many people at home? Watching their kids, our nurses, or in something where they need to be somewhere else too. The class action of this to me is almost more deadly than the disease. To be honest with you, nobody cares.
I think you know, we continue to talk about, or it's just been an ongoing theme, the disparity in wealth in the United States. This is going to highlight an extension of that, and it's going to be kind of the disparity between people that have secure, are basically set for life. If you're a public school teacher, you're pretty much set for life.
Yep.
If you're a tenured professor at Loyola, you're pretty much set for as long as you want to be there. I'm not tenured. There were some questions around whether or not I was going to be teaching there next year. In the past couple of weeks, and I was able to get them to promise me that I'll definitely be teaching there next year, but I had to take on some extra duties to make sure that was going to happen.
What are you cooking in the cafeteria?
No, I'm in charge of the MS and finance program now.
Oh, cool.
Oh, nice.
Well,
yeah.
It sounds better than it is, but
well, I mean,
by taking that administrative duty on, I am guaranteed to be there.
Now, first of all, you're not in charge of, you're the chief.
I'm the chief. I've forgotten what. I'm director.
Yeah, the chief sounds
That's
better.
That's what it is.
Chief sounds better.
Director of the MS and Finance Program.
Well, good for you.
I got to explain, I need to explain to people why Loyola is a better place to go to than, like, some other school.
But when people say, make sure you give somebody a break, go eat out, does anybody care if the people are distancing themselves in the Chipotle kitchen? How many people have been?
Oh, I know. Yeah. No,
Does anybody care what an Amazon warehouse looks like? As long as the crap shows up on my front porch, I don't care.
By the way, Kevin O'Neill tweeted us, and Kevin, of course, was on during hour one this morning. He said, Tom, your plan won't work in Michigan. The Whitmer administration has forced stores like Walmart and Meijer to rope off their non-essential departments.
Wow.
It's not here.
And he sent a picture of the yellow tape around all the non-essential departments.
Well, Meijer
and Walmart.
That's something. That's not happening here. If you're open, you're open. They're not letting Costco not sell furniture. Well, they can sell whatever they want. Whoa. Is that good? I guess the next question, is that good or bad? I don't know. I guess if I need
that's good for Amazon.
Yeah.
It's fair in some ways, but it's just better for Amazon.
Yeah, does anybody care about, but the thing of it is, I'm not getting infected there. I don't care if the guy who put it in the box dies, right? I mean, it sounds harsh, but, right?
Well, I think you do.
I do.
You're nicer than that.
I know, but I'm saying, in general, I happen to know it's a triple E. It's poor Nick cooking that back there by himself, so it's not like, but I mean, what does it look like in the back of a Chipotle? Are there 20 people back there, three feet, 2 feet, 1 foot away from each other? How often are they?
I would severely doubt it. You know,
there's one person back there.
I doubt that tremendously as well. We don't even order in here. I mean, it's home cooked meals every night right now, for the very reason that you're talking about.
All right. So, what are you guys going to do after all this? Come August,
I'm going to Portillo's. What I'm doing after all this.
But I'm saying, after all this, come August, you guys all get it and you all survive. But what if you already had it and you're doing all this?
If I already had it, I want to go back to my office.
Well, I allegedly,
if I've already had it, I know, and I can't give it to other people, I would like to be able to return to my office.
Do you know Kenny Polcari, who's our contributor on Tuesday? I love Kenny. He was in New York to drive his daughter to Boston. She had something going on there, but he had it. I mean, he was under doctor's care by phone some people obviously die. Some people don't even know they have it. Kenny had the classic, and he told us on the, this is not me telling him out of school, he told us on the phone, over the phone on the show twice, he had the classic 12 days. Temperature would go up and down, lost his sense of smell.
He also didn't have all the symptoms, so you don't know if he had it, and he was not tested.
He had a temperature the same period of time. He had the chills. He lost the sense of smell, sense of taste. Everything you read about is happening.
Yeah.
So the doctor said, as long as your temperature doesn't get 103, doctor told him, I talked to Kenny, I'm sure you got it. As long as it's not 103, don't come in. We don't want you here. And, oh, by the way, we can't really help you unless you get real bad. And he said his temperature never got that high. It was a crummy 10 days. Now he feels fine. Now, for him to go back to Florida, he never got a test for it. He can't get in one of the other tests for the, what do you call it, the remainders, antibodies.
But you have the antibodies.
And if he goes to Florida from New York or Massachusetts, they're going to want him to go somewhere for 14 days and quarantine himself. So that's why he's not going back to Florida.
My in-laws flew back yesterday from Arizona, and my wife said that they can't come see their grandchildren unless they quarantine 2 weeks. I'm glad I wasn't around for that discussion.
Well, like I said, your wife is one of incredibly many that have bought into this incredible fear. And not for no reason. I'm not criticizing. Yeah. I'm saying there is, but at the end of the day, it may turn out that this thing is like the cold, and we're just going to manage it, and it's going to work its way through, and we can't stop it. I don't ever want to give up on anything. You know that, but it looks to me like Sweden's taking the other approach, and they're not doing any worse. I don't know how much better they're doing, but they're not doing any worse. They're saying we get to 60% of the people have it. That's how we're going to protect. Until then, we're going to protect everybody who's at risk, the old people. Now, you're not going to be able to protect the one on a once in a while young person who gets it and can't handle it. But when was the last time? I mean, think about it for a second. The common cold. How many people do you've ever known that it affects the exact same way? I know people that go to work with a cold.
Everybody is different.
Yeah. And this is the cold, only 20 times worse or 50 times worse.
Much worse.
Yeah.
And sneaky.
Yeah, and sneaky. But so is the cold. I know people, when they get a cold, it's 3 months they sound like they got TB before they finally get it out of their lungs. Somebody else?
Well,
you know, no big deal, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's...
So, well, my wife was an ER nurse for a long time, so that's why I take her lead on all this. Plus, she's my wife, and...
I got you. And I don't blame her. Yeah. I don't blame her. I mean, what the hell? I'm just saying, it's hard to have a middle ground on fear. You know, right? You see a snake in front of you. Yeah.
I don't know how much. I don't know how much it's fear as just the ability to do the right thing. I'm able to do both of my jobs from my house, and Why do I really need to go downtown?
Yeah, I'm being careful. I think in this case, because they basically blew it for 10 weeks, and the medical establishment wasn't ready, I honestly think we needed a time where we gave the medical group a break to ramp up in the hospitals and so forth. But once you got capability there, I don't know how you keep people shut down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anyway, let's talk about the, how do you, listen all day long, as you know, to two or three stations, because that's what I do for a living, to watch stuff from my people. I don't, and I listen to all these young guys talk about whenever you have something like this happen to the market, what are they seeing, Russell? I've been around a long time, and I read a lot about from before I got here. When did they ever see something like this before? I've never once, except maybe, 2008 for a week.
That's our closest analogy, at least within recent memory.
Yeah, but you can equate the
amount of uncertainty that we had then to what we're experiencing right now. And even when we rallied off the bottom in March of 2009, for most of 2009, we all sat around waiting to, going into a weekend and then to hear on a Sunday night that, Bank of America Merrill Lynch was out of business or something like that. So the lingering effects and the fear, the biggest negative that you hear about this thing right now is we're going to get a second wave of infections if we open up too quick. And I think with 2008, it was, if the economy even slows a tad, we're going to get a second wave of a bunch of big financial problems, which never happened.
Well,
the thing is, it's harder to predict the one that we're dealing with right now than the last one.
I don't think there's any comparison. The one in 2008, I put some spreads on in insurance companies that I thought I would lose on two of the six, and I would still make enough on the other four. I knew in 2 weeks they weren't going out of business. That we had made the save. They weren't going to have a good year. They weren't going out of business. I look at this. Mm-hmm. I've got every big stock in the world sitting in front of me. You see my stuff here. I'm going to say half of these companies I'm looking at going, man, I don't know. And every week it gets worse, not better. That's the difference about this one, 2008. Once it happened in 2008, every week got better. Right?
Yeah.
Once we made it through the first weekend and we lost Bear Stearns pretty much. Lost the other guys, Lehman. After that, we really didn't. Like I said, once we managed to put AIG back together, we didn't lose Allstate, we didn't lose State Farm, we didn't do any of that stuff. We didn't lose Vanguard, But there was never. I'm going to say there wasn't a month, let's put it that way, that you weren't more confident that we were going to survive in the month before, once it started.
Right.
And now this, every day we're doing this, our chance of survival get less. This is totally, totally different, not even on the same planet. And how is it that only a few of us seem to see that? This is insane. I don't care how much money God can come down and give UAL a printing press, and if nobody's flying in October, he can't save them.
There really is. If we're not able to get the economy back up and running. We talked about this in the first half hour. If we can't get things back up and running, there's only so much that they can do. Eventually you can't. It's kind of like the whole communism eventually fell apart. If you're not producing enough to keep an economy going, it's going to fall apart. And we've got to figure out some ways that we can get parts of our economy back up and running sooner rather than later.
I think you need
and
to start
do it in a safe manner.
Yeah, I think I think the Cubs should play. If all the Cubs test negative and the other team tests negative, the Cubs should play next week with 2,000 people in the stands. And if you want to sit 20 feet apart, do it.
They talked about playing out. I thought they were going to play out in Arizona.
Right. Well, they're thinking about it, but I'm saying,
they could go ahead and start doing that. That would, if anything, appease some advertisers and give people something to do.
But
personally, I don't really see the big importance on getting sports up and running.
But I'm saying it's an example.
For other things, but if they could do it like that and do it completely safely, why not?
Well, where I'm going with this, we've only got a minute, is whenever you do, you're not going to be able to guarantee that no Cub player 4 weeks later tests positive. You're not going to be able to do that a year from now. You're not going to be able to do it this week. You're not going to be able to do it 5 years from now, I don't think.
The only way you could do it is continuous testing of MLB players.
Right.
And if you're wasting the limited tests on those guys, you're going to really upset the rest of the world.
Well, I would say we should go to, we should go to Iceland and buy tests. They seem to have plenty. Thank you, Russell. Good luck.
You bet.
Stay quarantined, bud. SP Futures up 47 now. Now we're halfway back from yesterday. A nice run up here. NASDAQ up 137. Back tomorrow.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.